Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. Lots going on today, lots even before I got my schedule done to talk about things today, lots of things happening. I was talking to friends of mine in the D.C. Metro Police Department. Earlier today, I see that the D.C. mayor is now on doing a press conference flanked by her D.C. Metro police chiefs, who hopefully shortly won't have a job because they are definitely in the way of not the mayor, but the police chiefs. They are definitely in the way of allowing the police to do what the police do. And we'll get into some of the things you're not being told in regards to the statistics, the mayor and certain people on social media are saying, well, crime is down since the 2023 post-COVID spike in crime. There's a lot more to that story than just the numbers that you're seeing and what they're using to tell you a different story. And if you don't believe me, go to D.C. and wander around. Wander outside of the tourist areas and tell me what you feel when you come back. But we're going to talk about more on that. There's a couple of things more pressing than that are happening right now. There's been an explosion in a U.S. steel plant in Pennsylvania where there's one dead and dozens are injured at this time. There is a rescue and recovery going on. Hopefully the one dead and it doesn't expand any more than that, but it's the U.S. steel in Clairton, Coke Works plant. Some people reported as multiple explosions there, but dozens of people buried under rubble. So that's something that's been going on today. You also have a major power outage just south of us in Maryland. BG&E has asked its customers to limit power use because one of its main power plants has gone offline in what they're calling an unscheduled event. So what that exactly means, we do not know, but obviously something's going on with this power plant being connected to the power grid and not delivering power necessary to power the area, because they are stating that if we do not curtail power usage, they will be experiencing forced blackouts and brownouts throughout the area. So that's some of the more pressing stuff, more especially if you live in an area, especially as hot and humid as it is in parts of Maryland, that when your electricity goes out, it is a big deal. It is something like that. And then to our west here in the U.S. Steel Clairton Coke Works plant, this massive explosion. And I posted a news story on my social media, so you could check it out there. I know some area politicians have already said that they are monitoring the situation. So hopefully it does not get any worse than it is. And the injuries are recovered and no more loss of life in this situation. But we will be monitoring that as well. As far as what's going on in D.C., and again, I had a conversation quite early on. A matter of fact, they reached out to me, friends of mine in the D.C. Metro, not only the union, but also the rank and file that I have been friends with for decades. And basically, they are ecstatic that they are under new leadership. One of them said that, they got their old job back because they used to be a federal agent, won't say which department, but they were a federal agent and have worked for decades in the D.C. Metro Police and have seen the decline. We talk about it often, nothing unsimilar to what we've seen in New York and other places. So I asked if they were deputized in D.C. because I figured that would be the logical step as far as immigration and stuff like that, but no. He says we're under the Department of Justice now. There is a section of law that has been there since the Constitution was drafted that the feds can take over the D.C. Police Department, and that hasn't been enacted. They now fall under the Department of Justice and the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, and the head of the DEA now is the acting commissioner of the D.C. Metro Police Department. As far as these 1,000 or so National Guard troops that are being deployed, again, there's limits to what National Guard troops can do as far as supplementing local law enforcement. They will do facility security. They will do traffic control. They will do high visibility posts that now are by uniform police department. But what they're not saying is the D.C. Metro Police Department is down over 850 officers. They are understaffed. Their common strength is about 3,500. They are nowhere near that. Like I said, they're about at 2,700 now, over 800 down. So it's really not an increase as far as presence. What it will do is free up overburdened, overworked DC Metro police officers to finally take a breath and do their jobs once they gather themselves and get back to it. So that's as far as the 1,000 National Guard troops. When you factor in that the DC Metro is down over 850 police officers or staff, it kind of makes sense why that would be needed. And then you have to ask yourself, well, why is the DC Metro, our nation's capital police department, so deficient in police? Well, because their leadership is horrible. They're not allowed to do their job. They're micromanaged. They have a mayor that cares less about them. So where do they go from here? Of course, they have a hiring issue, which I would imagine will turn around quite quickly. I don't know the logistics of the DOJ being in charge of the police department now, but if possible, I would imagine that some leadership in the Metro DC Police Department will be relieved of duty, forced to retire, fired, whatever options they're given in the very near future, and put people that can actually do the job and do it well in those positions. As far as the statistics go, yes, you are correct. If you look at the statistics from 2023, which I have, some of the crime categories have dropped, but there's caveats to that. A, over 40%, some make it as high as 61% of the DC area, both federal government and private employees, are not back to full-time in-person work as of today, as of now. So you have less of a populace in Washington, D.C. as far as potential victims, potential people coming and going, just less people there. So that's one of the caveats that does alter statistics. The other one is juvenile crime. The average age of an armed carjacker in Washington, D.C. is 13 years old. Those crime statistics that they're talking about does not include juvenile crime, which a large portion of it is. The other thing is the FBI UCR, the Uniform Crime Reporting Statistics, used to be mandatory, but under the Biden administration, that became voluntary. So even though the DC metro area police does still report to the FBI UCR, other major police departments don't. The NYPD does not any longer. The LAPD does not. Major police departments across the country do not report their statistics to the FBI Uniform Crime Reporting Statistics anymore, again, skewing the data of per capita. If you want to get a grasp on crime in the DC metro area, go there. I've been there. I'm there many times over the past couple of months. It is not a fun place to be. It is a place you need to be on guard. Once you walk a half a block or a block off the beaten path, if you go there after business hours, it is a ghost town other than people trying to go to restaurants and bars who are tourists in the area or people who live there, really not so much. And you have, like I said, these groups of teenagers who get slapped on the wrist from a judicial revolving door who have been preying on victims time and time again. And all you have to do is look for news stories. So you could look at the pros and cons. You could say this is one thing when it's not. This is a legal move under the law. I've looked at the Section 7. I have to get it again. I had it pulled up earlier to look back on it because I didn't even know this was an option myself until I got the call from friends in the DC Metro Police Department who are, again, ecstatic about this change. Obviously, being sworn police officers, they are not allowed to speak their mind. They are not allowed the same First Amendment that you or I have to discuss these things, which is probably why I was contacted quite early this morning on these changes. And I think it's a good thing. I think it's a shame what our nation's capital has come to as far as crime. And the entities that be, the elected officials, the mayor, the police chiefs appointed by the mayor, and leadership there have had ample time to fix the issues that are there. not play the shell game and point at statistics that they know aren't telling only telling a partial story to try and retain power. And that's all this is. And that's been taken away now. As far as the National Guard troops, listen, I think there should be places in our nation's capital where we do have active military, a presence of uniformed active military. I also think that this is more of a case of such a deficiency in what should be in law enforcement, 3,500 sworn officers in the D.C. Metro Police and other police entities that are there that are also understaffed. To give those officers, again, a chance to pause and take a deep breath and do the work that they're supposed to be doing, not worrying about double and triple shifts because there's no one else to work these jobs, that they have to work their full shift chasing crime and then stand at a post, a traffic post, or you know, a high visibility post or a security post at one of their stations. There's plenty of those things that happen in D.C. So that's a little different side of what's happening in D.C. As far as the National Guard, I think it's going to be extremely temporary because I do expect, like we've seen with federal agencies, that hiring applications have gone through the roof. I expect the same thing in the very near future for D.C. Metro if the right changes begin to be made and if the officers feel supported. So that's, again, you can obviously and gladly have your opinion on this. If you haven't been to D.C. in the past year or so or the past couple of months or the past 2 years even, before you start casting, well, this is this and this is that and this is a total overreach from government, go down there and visit. It's the nation's capital. It's a great time to be there anyway. You know, go to Arlington Cemetery, walk over the bridge to the Lincoln Memorial, walk around the mall, but also do it after hours. Maybe go there for an 8 o'clock drink in downtown Washington and see how you feel then, or go up to some of the areas just on the fringe of D.C. and let me know how you feel about that. Or park your car in some of those areas, not in a garage, and see what's – I saw a picture of a car parked in D.C. that had a sign taped to its inside back passenger window that said, "This car has been broken into five times. Please do not break into it again. There is nothing left to take." I'm sure just making a point, and these teenage criminals would probably just shatter the window because that annoyed them. So we'll see what happens as we move forward, right? It's going to work or it's not going to work, and we'll see the results and judge it then. It's 3:21 here at WILK. We'll be back with the Rob O'Donnell Show in just a minute. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. And now on to the regularly scheduled program. I think we have some of the stuff that was just kind of fired up today out of the way. And here's a story, you know, I've been diving into. We've been talking about these data centers that are going to use a plethora of electricity here. And some of the ideas is for them to also build their own power plant to power that. And I'm on at this point looking at it, I think data centers will be a positive thing for the area if done correctly. But I think that's one of the things that needs to be looked at. But I also look at it objectively, and I see now that that areas that have embraced data centers throughout the country have also seen their domestic electric bills for residents and other businesses creep up. And if that's going to be the case, then we need to maybe take a look at this. One of the benefits that I've talked about to living near infrastructure such as a data center is does it put you on a more secure power grid? Again, when I managed a building in Virginia, right outside of Arlington, and one of the benefits for that building was that we had a hospital right up the block and we were on that power grid. So it was a very hardened power grid. It very rarely ran into issues where power went down. you know, even in emergencies, even when there was some kind of, you know, natural disaster or something that we've had there, there's power that was rarely down. So that was one of the benefits. And we did not obviously pay higher rates because we were on there. It was a shared system. Now, data centers building their own power supply, if they could build a power supply big enough to house themselves, should take the burden off the local communities and businesses, lower the demand, and therefore, hopefully, lower price. But it's something that needs to be looked at because this was dove into. And amid rising electric bills, states under pressure to insulate regular household and business ratepayers from the cost of feeding the big tech's energy-hungry data centers. They're really trying to deal with this on the fly, and that's not good because we usually come out on the losing end then. So some critics question whether states have the spine to take a hard line against tech behemoths like Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Meta. And that's some of the names that we haven't heard here in our data centers. Much smaller, but still the same kind of power draw when they open up these, and some of them are massive. But more than a dozen states have begun to take steps as data centers drive a rapid building out of power plants and transmission lines. This has meant pressuring the nation's biggest power grid operator to clamp down on price increases. Studying the effect of data centers on electric bills or pushing data center owners to pay larger shares of local transmission costs, therefore making it a benefit for the residents around these. Listen, if you're going to build a data center, a huge data center down the road from communities or across the street from communities, you have to offset that somehow. Not only are creating jobs, which is a good thing, not only creating infrastructure, which is a good thing, not only creating this area as a hotspot as far as the auxiliary businesses that will benefit from it, restaurants, bars, home sales, hotels, but by lowering the people around there's electric bills, which may make it that much more palatable. You know, municipalities, counties, and such like that obviously get tax increases from the benefit, but the everyday property owner, listen, municipalities, counties, they'll just find things to spend that money on. We never see that. You need something that we, the homeowners, see, the small businesses see, the things that drive communities. So there are some areas that are starting to catch on to this. Some data centers could require more electricity than cities the size of Pittsburgh, Cleveland, or New Orleans, and make huge factories look tiny in comparison. And it's pushing policymakers to rethink the system that historically has spread transmission costs among the classes of customers that are proportional to electric use. So if you want to build a billion-dollar data center down the road, well, you pay the majority of the costs for redoing those transmission lines, not split up to everybody, but, you know, it should be, those are the things that our area politicians should be looking at. And some states are starting to go down this direction. Some states are starting to put the big picture in play. But if we're playing catch up to this, we'll come out on the losing end. So again, as someone who's come out in the positive about these data centers, seeing the statistics now to where these have already been placed or in development or nearing completion, and the electric bills around those areas for residents and small businesses have crept up as well, that needs to be addressed. And our area needs to address this, just like other areas are looking into this, like Oregon, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Michigan. You know, these areas have already started to look into this. I'm going to throw this story up on my social media. It's not up yet. It'll probably be up by the end of the show. So you could look into it because it did change my perspective on the data centers that, yes, we need to be more cautious here because so far what we're seeing is it becomes a burden rather than a plus for the average American that lives in the vicinity of these data plants. And unless there's a plus for the people who are putting up with this in our area, for the people who are having the change to their communities, then it's going to be that much harder to accept these things as they try to grow. And I think we should grow. I think it is the future, but it needs to be done correctly. It's 3:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Well, I just received a press release from the Department of Defense stating that 800 soldiers were activated today as part of the D.C. Safe and Beautiful Task Force, with about 100 to 200 of them supporting law enforcement. Duties for those personnel include, like I stated, administrative and logistical roles, as well as providing physical presence in support of law enforcement. There is limited role that our National Guard can take when it comes to supporting law enforcement. And again, those duties will include administrative and logistical roles, as well as physical presence at certain areas. In D.C., there's a lot of places that require physical presence that will free up sworn law enforcement. And it's interesting because some of the people, some of the text messages I'm getting that are obviously against this. Did you have any issue when they dispatched thousands to Ground Zero after 9/11? And again, they were there to do the same thing, logistical roles. They did traffic control. They did perimeter security. They did things to free us up so the people could, the police officers there could do the job that we needed to do. Again, because something at that scale obviously was the largest crime scene in the history of American policing. So again, thousands of National Guard troops were deployed then as well, again, to do the same kind of logistical roles, administrative, logistical. They stood station house security to free up those officers, because every police precinct has station house security, to do patrol because there were certain members digging through rubble to collect DNA to give family members closure. So same thing here. And to move to the explosion that at the U.S. Steel, Claritin Cloak Works explosion, Senator Kim Ward, Pennsylvania senator for that district, said, "Today's tragic events have left our entire region shaken. My heart and prayers are with the families enduring unimaginable worry and grief. I'm deeply grateful for the swift and selfless actions of first responders and rescue crews who continue working under stressful conditions. For generations, U.S. Steel and the Claritin Coke Works plant have stood as symbols of Western Pennsylvania's work ethic and determination. Our region's story has been forged in the heat of steel mills by people who do not back down from challenges, but instead stand shoulder to shoulder in hard times. In the face of heartbreak, we will not waver, because in Western Pennsylvania, we are forged in steel and we do not break." So that's a public statement coming out from Senator Kim Ward, Pennsylvania senator who covers the district where this explosion took place. So that's an update there. Another texter said, "Rob, none of the DC stuff means anything until the judges and DAs won't prosecute." Well, there's the thing now. U.S. attorney for the DC area is now Janine Pirro. So if they charge them federally, it will. And if the DC Metro Police are under the federal jurisdiction now, they do have options, so we will see how it goes. You know, if you get juveniles, 13, 14, 15, with armed carjacking, if they charge them federally, that would sure send a message that D.C.'s off limits to those thugs. And that's exactly what they are. Some good news to wrap up from last week is one of the state troopers that were shot in that Susquehanna County shooting was released and is home, and one more remains in the hospital. Again, preventative. They're in stable condition, but under doctor's care nonetheless, based on the injuries that were received, which were chest shots. Thankfully, the bullet-resistant vest did its thing, and against rifle fire, that's a miracle in itself. We did find out later the evening when I signed off on Thursday that the woman, which was the original call of a woman down, was killed by her neighbor. And they did have a memorial service for that woman who was a hospital employee for 20 years, I saw. And an EMT that was injured when his ambulance took fire and crashed his ambulance and rightfully was shooken up. You know, when you're an EMT, a lot of times you don't sign on to take rifle fire when you're trying to come in to help someone. And just an all-around heroic actions by many on that day. And again, sad for this neighbor who was basically just executed in her driveway from her neighbor across the street. And then the troopers fired upon as soon as they arrived. So that's a little update on Susquehanna County as well. It's 3:42 here at WILK. We'll be back with the Rob O'Donnell Show. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 3:45 coming up on the Bloomberg Money Minute in 5 minutes here. NEPA higher education institutions are raising their tuition for the upcoming school year. More and more, it appears. 10 2- and 4-year higher education institutions in Lackawanna and Luzerne counties are raising tuition for the 2025-2026 school year. According to information provided by officials, the increases range from 2% to 6.8%, with officials citing rising costs for the reasons for the hikes. Tuition at Penn State University's Commonwealth campuses, including Scranton, Wilkes-Barre, Hazleton, Schuylkill, Berks, isn't increasing for in-state undergraduates, but it is going up 1% for out-of-state undergraduates and the in-state and in-state graduate students, and 2% for out-of-state graduate students. So what's often not looked at, and the state university system has requested a 6.5% increase for them, which includes Kutztown, East Stroudsburg, Commonwealth University, Bloomsburg. I believe there's 12 or 14 universities across the state that are going to be affected by that. And it's the first time in years they've done that. But when we talk about the student loan crisis, what's often not discussed is the increase in college tuition, how it's outpaced all other inflation tremendously, if you look at it. And once the federal government decided it was going to back student loans, universities, colleges across the nation, both private and public, had a carte blanche, a gold card, as you may say, to go crazy because, again, the welfare of the students wasn't their primary concern and obviously isn't their primary concern. I mean, you look at some of the Penn State campuses in our area, Berks to be one of them. I believe the graduation rate for a 4-year degree in 6 years is like 23%. So you mean to tell me in Penn State Berks, you in 6 years may get a 4-year degree and you have a 23% chance of doing that? Someone's not applying themselves here, and I don't think it's just the students, but if students are paying, what is it, $50-something thousand a year? And maybe in 6 years you have a 23% chance of getting your degree. You're wasting 6 years of your money and a good chunk of debt that you may never get out of again. Where this needs to start is our public school system in high school. There needs to be. And if you're a school district administrator here in Northeast Pennsylvania, you need to take this upon yourself. And you need to institute financial literacy for your students. If you care about them even a little bit, and I guarantee you in 5 years, you will have metrics to make yourself a hero. There will be people writing papers about you in the future because you will see how your students did not fall into the trap that many others did. And then they fall back and say, well, I was never informed. Well, you're a high school graduate. You're supposed to read the fine print. Your parents are supposed to read the fine print. I understand a lot of parents may not be involved. But the answer is I got fleeced or I got tricked or I got preyed upon by predatory lending. Well, who signed the paperwork in the end? Well, that's ultimately who to blame. And believe me, I'm not defending this because it's ridiculous, because they all skyrocketed prices, interest rates went through the roof because they, you know, the government's backing it. So it's a no-lose situation for the universities, for anyone else. If it was based on the students' ability to pay, these universities, these colleges could not be charging what they're charging. If lending institutions actually looked into it and said, we're not going to give you a loan for that major. Sorry, it's just not marketable. We don't think it's a good investment for us. You'd have a lot bigger changes here. So I implore school districts in high school, financial literacy, and teach kids how to deal with this. It's 3:50, time for the Bloomberg Money Minute. You're back with the Rob O'Donnell Show on this Monday, August 11th, 2025. Got a text message in from the text line. Rob, okay. PSU is all out of whack. The state tuition is going up. Several campuses are closing, yet illegals are eligible for in-state tuition. Something is crazy wrong, Rob. That's Lou from Dallas. Had me look at that because I was unaware of that. And from what I'm finding is Penn State University, Penn State, have policies that allow undocumented students, including DACA recipients, to qualify for in-state tuition if they meet specific residency requirements. These requirements also often include attending and graduating from an accredited Pennsylvania high school or obtaining a GED in the state, typically after attending for a minimum number of years. There is also legislative efforts in Pennsylvania to expand in-state tuition eligibility for undocumented students, such as the proposed In-State Tuition Fairness Act and the Education Dream Act. These bills will allow individuals to qualify for in-state tuition based on residency and educational criteria, regardless of their immigration status. Mm-hmm. So, but yet, if you've ever applied to Penn State, let's see how much it cost you and your children. A few stories on Luzerne County here. Luzerne County is considering a debt restructuring to save money without extending the repayment schedule. This is good business. This is good planning. It's always good to see if you could do a better rate if you refinance your debt. Under the consideration, you're not extending it down the road longer, or you're not incurring additional debt, which is often done. Which is often done, especially in county government, Lackawanna County. I'm looking at you. So if you're just restructuring debt to save money and lower your interest rate by not extending the terms or financing additional debt, this is good practice and it should be done. Obviously, it should be cost beneficial to do it. So the fact that Luzerne County is considering this and looking at it, if it saves the taxpayer money, if it lowers what they're going to have to pay in the long run, and depending on how many millions of dollars in debt you're talking, it could be substantial. So this is good practice and a good idea. And hopefully we'll see what happens there. One of the other things that caught my attention out of Luzerne County is most Luzerne County council members and the controller do not support new proposed home rule charter. Well, when I read that, and I respect a lot of the people mentioned here, 7 out of 11 have already decided that they won't be supporting the proposed new county home rule charter. That raises my attention because when you have that many elected officials against something, I think it may be good for the beneficiaries of the people. So that's the way I look at these things, and it's a shame that we look at things that way. But there are term limits built into this. There are lowering the number of council members in this. So I would imagine that some people who may see themselves on the bubble of being cut there or may have their term limits cut short, of course they're going to be against it. But does that mean it's not beneficial for the people of Luzerne County? Again, I'm not a Luzerne County resident, but if you are a Luzerne County resident, you need to look into this and determine what works for you. And just don't go by, well, you know, these people said that it's not a good thing for us, so that's what I'm going to go with. No. Do your own homework on this, because if any elected official that's taking a stance on this, who's obviously affected by this, is coming from a point of bias, good or bad. And I haven't looked into the nuts and bolts of the details of this, but when that many, 7 out of 11, come out and say, no, no, this isn't for us, well, that's usually what's best for the people. So if you are a Luzerne County resident, you should really dive into it. Obviously, personally, they could vote one way or another, and it's their right to do so. But don't take their title or their position as your guidance or your recommendation. Obviously, hear it. I mean, it's why I'm talking about it. But you also have to realize it is they are affected by this negatively or positively, depending on the way you look at it. I would imagine if you're one of these elected officials and you're going to get cut, would you be for it? Or would you put your own self-interest before the public's? And I think that most of us can come to the conclusion there on which way that would go. So these are things you need to be paying attention to in Luzerne County. These are the things you need to really read the fine print on it and understand it. And if you don't understand it, go to these meetings and ask the questions, what does this mean for us? And again, depending on who's giving you that information, I really wish that there were county voter advocates that really just explain things, the pros and cons of things, rather than elected officials who obviously have a stake in it and are going to be biased from the start. So you as the voter, you're the one who's being affected by this the most. And you need to really do your homework on it so you could make an informed decision, because that's all you can do as a taxpayer, as a voter. Make an informed decision on what you think is best for you moving forward, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. It's coming up on 4 o'clock here on WILK.